Welcome to the Wednesday edition of the CBSSports.com College Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Norlander. It's a Wednesday edition, so Jeff Goodman and Gary Parrish are joining me, and this is another new one here. Goodman and I are in the press conference area of Madison Square Garden recording this shortly after 1 a.m. Eastern here on Wednesday morning, technically. We were here for the Jimmy Fee Classic. And so we've almost come full circle in the way we've recorded these podcasts. Now all we need is Parrish and I to be in the same room and Goodman to be far away. And, of course, we can inevitably get to the awkwardness of trying to do this with three of us all together at once. But, gentlemen, it's good to talk to you again. How you doing?
I am well. How are things in New York City?
You know, they're good. The doubleheader we'll touch on very briefly in a bit. I mean, it was the second half was good. The second game, the first one was garbage. But you know what? I tell you what, it was a fun night. It was my first Jimmy V Classic. Enjoyed myself. Good fan support for UConn and NC State. And Goodman wrote on NC State. You can go on CBSSports.com right now and get his smooth take on the Wolfpack. Actually, it's so funny, Goodman. The NC State wins. And yep. And you find a way to bash him anyway. So that's good on
you. I didn't bash him. I just wrote the truth that this NC State team is not anywhere close to where people thought they'd be, fans thought they'd be, or where we think they may be in a month or two. That they're okay right now. And if they had lost tonight, which unless Richard Howell and C.J. Leslie, luckily they stepped up big, and they should have because UConn's front court stinks. So they needed to step up big down the stretch. They did. They got the win. But what if they had lost to UConn? They would have come up short against Oklahoma State by 20, by the way. They would have come up short at Michigan, which there's no shame in. And then they almost lost to a UConn team that's mediocre at best.
Yeah.
So this team still has a long way to go. They could get there, but Mark Gottfried's the first one to admit that they're nowhere close right now.
Gary, you didn't see the game right because you were doing pro duty in your home city?
I don't know that it was duty, but I was I was at FedEx Forum watching Zebo 38-21. So no, I did not see the game, but I've read the AP recap and obviously looked at the box score. You know, it's funny because when we were back in the preseason and we were looking at the ACC, NC State was the pick to win the league, and then it was Carolina and then Duke, and you could find some people who thought it should be Carolina and then NC State, or then NC State and Carolina. But almost nobody picked Duke to win the ACC. And yet, as we look at it right now, it seems very clear Duke is the best team in that league.
For sure. And we've touched on Duke before. They continue to look really nice. Another team that was expected to win its league, and plenty of people think that won't happen, is Kentucky. I do want to shift to them. They didn't play on Tuesday, but they're riding a two-game losing streak. And I mentioned this to Goodman earlier as we were watching the just absolute debacle of Texas versus Georgetown. I told him, you know, I kind of can't even believe, Gary, that Kentucky's not even a top 25 team right now. Like, in their innermost DNA, maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but they're not there now, and according to the polls. And it's kind of shocking.
The Parrish poll has them still at number one.
Oh, okay. Well, Gary, regardless, I mean, they're not in the actual polls as a top 25 team. I'd like to actually commend the college basketball, the greater universe of it, because it doesn't seem like there's been too much overreaction to it. But still, it's a little bit of a big deal here. I mean, Gottlieb said on the Monday podcast he doesn't think this team is capable of even winning the national title.
Well, I mean, how many teams are capable of winning the national title? Sometimes we make these definitive statements and set the bar so high, you know, like, you know, somebody would said to me early in the season, I think it was actually you, Norlander, that you didn't think, or you did think or didn't think one, that Kansas would be as good as this year or something as last
year. I thought they would be a better team than last year.
They went 16-2 in the Big 12 and played for the national championship.
Totally.
Like, it's very hard to be better than that. I guess I would say this. Is Kentucky capable of winning the national championship? You know, I think to dismiss them so early when they still have three lottery picks is premature. They clearly have issues, and it's obviously not the team we thought we were going to see. The team we thought they were going to have, nobody anticipated it being out of the top 25 first week of December. But if they get things straight and get hot at the right time, I mean, when you've got that level of pros on a team, you've got a chance. So How many teams really do we think have an opportunity to win the national championship? Indiana, I guess. Louisville, I guess. Duke, I guess. Maybe Michigan or Syracuse. But, you know, if you were going to list 10 teams, I bet you couldn't get to 10 without including Kentucky. And I bet you'd be dumb if you
They have a chance. They have a chance. Let's face it. If Ryan Harrow becomes a different player, a reliable point guard, they absolutely have a chance, because then Goodwin goes back to his natural position. Poitras can be kind of the number two guy. Nerlens can be what he should be, which is a great shot blocker. Here's my biggest question with Kentucky, and not enough people have talked about this. Why doesn't Kentucky have any depth? Why didn't John Calipari, who's the greatest recruiter, and I'll be the first to say it, in the modern era of college basketball, why doesn't he recruit a team with 9 or 10 quality players? I'm not saying they got to be pros at 8, 9, and 10. But why doesn't he have better players than Twani Beckham and John Hood? And I don't even know who else is down that bench.
I don't. You are aware that they lost their entire team, right?
But you knew that. We knew they were going to lose. Listen, you, me, and my 9-year-old daughter and your 9-year-old son all knew that, let's face it, Anthony Davis was gone. Kale Gilchrist was gone. Terrence Jones was gone. Maybe you thought Deron Lamb was going to stick around. Darius Miller was a senior. We knew he was gone. So that's 4 right there that were guaranteed to be gone for the most part. Correct?
Yes.
All I'm saying is, again, wouldn't you plan to have a little bit more quality depth at spots, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 or 8, 9, 10 than you have with this team, so that when Ryan Harrow can handle things or get sick or whatever the heck it was, you have a capable backup point guard? That's my only question.
Here's the issue, I think, is that when you go out and sign the best kid at every position in a class, it is very difficult to get a kid ranked 50 to 100 to come in right behind him, you know? Because that kid looks at it and goes, okay, where am I going to play? Like I've been playing against this other guy for the past, you know, my entire life on the AAU circuit. He's better than me. That's why he's ranked 3rd in the country, and I'm ranked, you know, 68th in the country. So why I'm not going to go play behind him for however long I've got to. The other interesting thing, and I think I'm going to write about this, but I've been saying I think I'm going to write about it for a few weeks and just haven't done it yet. You know, people look at this as like, how did they get into this point guard situation? Well, there were no good point guards in the class of 2012. They didn't exist. There's like no great, like Yogi, I guess, was heralded, but
they weren't getting him. They weren't getting him ever.
Like the guys who were really good were sort of tied to other places already. And then go look at the list of point guards in the class of 2012. There was not a Marcus Teague or Brandon Knight or, you know.
That's why he took Ryan Harrow.
Ryan Harrow was a bust, this is where you're
your point guard to back up Ryan Harrow and next year the Harrison twins.
No. I got that. Listen, I think when you consistently recruit the best player at that position in the country, and listen, maybe I'm shortchanging John Calipari. Maybe he should just be able to go out and pick the top 2.
Once. Absolutely. I'm not saying he's got to get another lottery pick behind these guys, but you can certainly get a really good top 100 type player, I think, to back up some of these guys. That's all.
They certainly need one. Certainly need one. They're in a – because, like, you know, Ryan Harrow tonight, he played 21 minutes. He had 2 points. He was 1 of 2 from the field, 4 assists, no turns. But still, that's not
– No. That's not good enough.
That's not good enough for what they're trying to do there. He's got to be better. Right. And at this point, I'm not sure that he is. I'm not sure – like, to me
– Like, you're telling me Marcus Smart on this team couldn't have beaten out Ryan Harrow? And he wouldn't be the difference maker with Kentucky right now?
Oh, if you had Marcus Smart on this team, I think they would be undefeated and ranked number 1 in the country.
That's all I'm saying is you're saying it was a bad point guard class. I'm saying you're right, but why not roll the dice and grab another one of these guys rather than just relying on Ryan Harrow, who really did not have a good freshman year at NC State. They didn't love him there.
In fairness, though, like how many people projected Marcus Smart to be a point guard? Like, you know, go back and look at the recruiting rankings. He was not listed as a point guard.
He's just a player.
It does have an interesting feeling of with Kentucky and how good they are and the recruits they get. This is like failing to be able to pay your mortgage on your third house in the mountains of Vermont. Kentucky will be okay. They've got all this talent. We'll just see what they can do with it this year. A completely different kind of topic, but I wanted to touch on it. Texas looked terrible, and they're probably not going to go to the tournament this year. But the Mike Kabongo situation we have not addressed on the podcast. We haven't fleshed that out. So I did want to bring it up. If anyone's unfamiliar, you know, Mike Kabongo is a second-year player with Texas, flirted with the draft last year. He has not played yet this year. And if you haven't really noticed, it's because the NCAA hasn't really put out any sort of statement on what Kabongo's punishment is going to be. It's thought it's going to be a 10-game punishment, most of which he has already sat on. But as we get further into this, and as we've entered into December, Jeff, it's really ludicrous. We actually talked, not to like name drop or anything, but we talked to Billis about this tonight in between games. He's as fired up about this as I can recall him over almost any issue, because it's stupid when you get down to it. You know, it shouldn't even be considered illegal behavior if guys want to actually flirt with the draft and go get workouts in the offseason. That's essentially what Kabongo's issue revolves around. We don't know who was misled in what way, if anyone lied to who and how that happened. We still are waiting on that. But the whole situation is really something Texas shouldn't even have to be dealing with right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the NCAA should have made a determination by now. And the background is Mike Kabongo, a Canadian point guard, was working out in Ohio with Rich Paul, who's an agent, World Wide West's guy. Rich Paul was with CAA, has since left and gone off on his own. Kabongo is saying that Tristan Thompson, his friend, played with at Texas, played with an AAU, now with the Cleveland Cavs, paid for basically his stay. Whether it was, you know, the flight, the hotels, whatever it was, food, I don't know what it was, while he was in Ohio. And the NCAA obviously begs to differ. And they're just kind of waiting on this thing. And maybe there's more to it than just that. I don't know at this point. But all I do know is, you know, if you're the NCAA and that's all it is, which I don't even – I agree with Billis in a sense that, you know what, at this point, we got bigger fish to fry. We got – bigger things to worry about than kids working out with you know, workout guys that are represented by agents. It happens all over the place. Let them do it if they really want to do it. Let's worry about the bigger things right now in college basketball.
Gary, before I want to just jump in here, isn't it interesting, you know, you and Jeff looked into the Shabazz situation. And it just on the surface, it just seems stupid. I mean, Mike Kabongo could end up sitting 10 games and Shabazz Muhammad sat three. I mean, it just doesn't add up here. It's more inconsistency from the NCAA, and you know, I don't want to keep banging the drum of the NCAA and hitting them over the head, but it's just stupid.
What that suggests is that the NCAA has been able to prove, at least in their opinion, more extra benefits for Kabongo than they were able to prove for Shabazz Muhammad. Now you can laugh at that, and I'll laugh with you. But it comes down to what you can prove, and I suspect that the NCAA has been able to show that. For the amount of time Kabongo spent with this agent and around this agent, hotels, you know, meals, whatever, all of that stuff probably adds up to more money than they said in official capacity that Shabazz got from a financial advisor. Again, we can all laugh together, but this is the way this stuff works. I think on some level we're talking about two different issues here. I agree with you guys. The rule is stupid, you know, but I think a lot of the NCAA rules are stupid. You know, I wish we could cut that rule book, you know, and make it a fraction of what it actually is now and legalize most of this stuff and focus on the really big item issues. But so like if you and me and Goodman and Billis want to sit down and rewrite the NCAA rule book, like let's book it. You know, we'll get a conference room at a Marriott somewhere and get to work. As it is, what the kid apparently did is illegal. It's against the rules. And so when you break the rules and you get caught, where you end up.
Fair enough. I wanted to touch on one other thing. By the way, there was a crashing noise in the distance, and I at first
That's
thought
me. That's I, well, me through the wall.
Well, Goodman is actually sitting at the podium in the press room right now, just because why the hell not, right?
I'm going to hold my own news conference. I'm going to play Rick Barnes' news conference after that shellacking they took.
Well, yeah, and you've garnered enough.
Let me ask you guys about that, because you saw that up close, and this is a Texas team that I think when they went to Maui and got their brains beat in, we were sort of like, whoa, you know, Texas is in trouble. Is Rick Barnes in any trouble? Because, listen, this is just one crazy year, But Texas in basketball should never be this bad ever under any circumstances.
Yeah, but you know what? They were years ago, and last I checked and I looked at it tonight, Rick Barnes, you know how many NCAA tournaments he's been to in his 14 years at Texas, Gary?
Every one. Yeah, I got 14. It. Yeah, I know the stat.
14. All right. Well, listen, the bottom line is, has he gone to enough Final Fours? Has he won a national title? No, but Texas, last I checked, is a football school. Rick Barnes is beloved in Texas. He's very well liked.
Is he now? Listen, is he, though, by the fans? I don't know that that's true.
Well, by a large segment of the fans and certainly by the athletic director. Now, sure. Is this Texas team, when you look at it, you say to yourself, where's the A squad? They must have brought the JV squad tonight because they look no part of the Texas teams that you and I have seen, that we've traveled around the country, gone to Austin, seen at other venues over the last 5-6 years. And I'm not sure what's wrong with them. I'm not sure, to be honest, Gary, I'll say it, because we don't see Rick Barnes out that much recruiting anymore. He's not one of those guys that's out 30 days or whatever it is, 22 days in July. He's taken a step back, and you wonder if that, along with the staff changes over the past few years, have affected Texas. And also, how about the fact that now you've got Baylor, you've got Oklahoma State that can recruit and got Marcus Smart, SMU now with Larry Brown, who will get some players out of Texas. You've got somebody else in that area that I was thinking about. But you've got other people now that are competing for those players in Texas that Texas was able to get no problem a few years ago.
But the Texas is still, you know, over the years, I mean, you know, Kevin's not from Texas. Avery Bradley wasn't from Texas. They've been able to go out and recruit nationally. And even when they lost players, they always seem to have more, you know, on the way and more in that program. And just right now, you look at that roster and it's just like, I don't know. That doesn't – if I showed you the names on that roster, you would not say that looks like a roster that Texas should have.
I do want to hit on UConn real quick here, guys. They looked good against NC State in some ways. In other ways, I mean, the team is just frustrating as hell when Boatwright can just be a ball hog, to be honest. I mean, yeah, he can hit some big shots, you know, and make some plays, but he screws up so much. There are times I turned to Jeff, Gary, and I was like, who the hell's the point guard on this team? Like, because when Shabazz has the ball, at least you got to feel a little more comfortable as a UConn fan. But the playing aside, okay, they've looked good, they've looked bad, uneven. Kevin Ollie, you know, he's just in an awkward situation right now. They play a good one, they lose, and he comes in to do the press conference tonight, and, you know, his AD's, you know, kind of just hanging in the back, and I thought it was kind of symbolic just a little bit, because anyone following realizes that Kevin Ollie's only on like a 7.5-month contract right now, coaching for his job, Gary. And then in addition to that, we find out that Calhoun, I don't know how much he really means it, but he said it regardless on a Yes Network program for Center Stage this week that was taped. He did not completely close the door on coaching. Now, there are two thoughts with this. One is just, you know, Calhoun's an all-timer, a lifer in college basketball, and so it's something he would say. Others have said that may be Calhoun's way to put pressure on Ward Manuel to say, listen, you need to give Kevin a fair deal here. You and I, Gary, I know, believe that Ollie is deserving and worthy of a long-term contract now, not waiting until the end of the season.
I'll say this. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter to me in any real way. It's not going to affect my life who coaches UConn basketball. So, like, whatever.
But, amazing.
I would say this. If you either give him a chance or just acknowledge up front that he has no chance. You know, that's it.
You know, because you can't do that. You can't just acknowledge he's got no chance.
How about this?
Piss off every former UConn Husky. You can't do that. You've got to give him a shot. I think he's got to earn it.
How do you earn it in 7 months?
What do you mean, how do you earn it?
In a year where you can't make the tournament.
Coach. You go to practice as the AD. You watch how he deals with players. You watch games. You see how he goes out in the community. He'll do a lot of those things really well, but you make him earn it. He had 2 years as an assistant coach.
I'm fine. Listen, if you want to say that Kevin Ollie is not prepared to be the head coach at UConn, that's fine with me. Say that then. But, like, to make him somehow –
I don't know yet, neither does Ward Manuel. And, again, I keep going back to the fact of the matter is he does not want Jim Calhoun close to this program. So he's scared to give the job to Kevin Ollie because he knows, like Calhoun's doing right now, he makes these comments that he's coming back. All it's going to do is piss Ward Manuel off and want him to go in a different direction.
Here's the deal, and you know as well as I do, most athletic directors, I mean, you talk about going to practice and about, most athletic directors have no idea what they're watching in a basketball game. They don't, they simply look at it every single March. You know, nobody was trying to hire John Gross last year, and then he wins a couple of games in the NCAA tournament, and now Illinois wants to give him a lot of money. And I'm not saying like that's wrong. I'm just saying athletic directors evaluate on wins and losses. That's the way they do it. Go let somebody struggle through an entire season, win two games in the tournament, and he'll be the hottest coach in America and have job offers and contract extensions and everything else. Athletic directors, by and large, look at wins and losses. And so that's more than likely the way that UConn's athletic director is going to look at Kevin Ollie. And I just think that that's it's unfair. And how about this? Even if you're going to say give him a real shot and you're going to announce at the end of the year, Kevin Ollie has shown us that he's got – that he's head coaching material and he's going to be the leader of this program and here's his five-year contract. You know what you've done? You've tied his hands then for a year and hurt your program in some way. By delaying what you were going to end up doing.
But don't you hurt it worse if you hire him and sign him to a four-year deal and then you realize, oh, man, you know what? Maybe we screwed up here. Maybe he went 4-14 in the Big East this year. And you know what? Maybe he's not the right guy. Maybe he's a couple of years away from being able to – maybe he should go to Quinnipiac or LIU or something of that level first.
Athletic directors screw up every year. And you know what they do? They, if it ends up not being the right thing, they buy the coach out and they try it again.
Yeah, but again, all I'm saying is, what's the worst thing that can happen here by waiting a few more months? So you might lose, maybe you lose a recruit or two. Well, last I checked, Kevin Ollie's not getting top 50 players anyway right now.
Yeah.
Right now, because he's got a 7-month contract. How could
it doesn't matter. He's not.
It matters every other time we talk about college basketball coaches. We sit here all the time and say he's only got 2 years left on his deal. He's having trouble recruiting. Nobody knows if Jim Calhoun's going to be able to coach next year, so that's affecting recruiting. Why, if we agree that it matters in every other case, can we say that it doesn't matter here?
We don't know if it matters. We don't know if Kevin Ollie's going to be able to pull in a top 50 player or he's going to have to settle for, you know, top 100 players for the next few years. I don't know that yet. All I'm saying is I don't think there's a major downside to making sure that this is the right guy to lead your program long term. That's all.
There's an obvious downside. Now, if you want to argue that the risk of committing to Kevin Ollie now far outweighs or even outweighs at all any benefit that you might get from locking him up right now, I guess that'd be a debate we could have. But clearly, leaving your coach twisting in the wind on a 7-month contract, that's not ideal. There is a downside to that. You might not think it's a downside that matters enough to commit to him, but there's an obvious downside.
5-13. He goes 5-13 this year in the Big East. You're still going to hire him and take him for a 4-year deal, no problem?
You're missing the point. Here's my point.
I'm asking a question.
I would have already made the decision whether Kevin Ollie's going to be my coach or not. And then if he went 5-13, we'd have to deal with that. And if he went 13-5,
would you buy him out after 5-13?
No, absolutely not. I would never buy out any coach after 1 year.
Listen, this just speaks to what I feared would happen, and that's just we don't know what UConn basketball is after Jim Calhoun, and you can take that from what damn conference they're going to be in, but what the program is. Like, UConn was never good without Jim Calhoun. We just don't know where they are, and this is really just putting a magnifying glass on that and showing there's just general instability within the program. And to me, there needs to be a decision made before April. I just don't know if we're going to get that. But good chat in there. Hey, listen, I wanted to give you guys real quick. I know you've written about it. You've talked about it plenty on radio shows and on the web on CBSSports.com. But you both wrote a couple of really good pieces on Majerus. Rick Majerus died on Saturday night. Jeff, I'll go to you first. You know, if you want to just take off from that or just go in a different angle on just Majerus. I know you weren't totally surprised by the news, but have you talked to any coaches in the past couple of days about the things that were said about him or anything in general with Rick?
Yeah, you know, I have. I've talked to a few coaches. And honestly, a lot of the coaches I've talked to be honest, are reacting to all the positive columns out there and saying to me, hey, listen, you know what? A lot of people didn't paint the true picture of Rick Majerus, that he was a tough guy to deal with. He was a guy that a lot of people didn't like. You know, he didn't treat people all, you know, everybody especially well. Now, again, he was good to me. He was good to a lot of people. He was tough. He could be abrasive, as I wrote in my story. A lot of guys didn't enjoy working for him. What he was a entertaining coach, a hell of a basketball coach, and a lot of people respected him.
Gary?
The one thing everybody agrees on is that he's an incredible basketball coach. Yeah, I mean,
right.
In terms of not necessarily the best guy at leading a program or representing a program or recruiting or working hard on the recruiting trail, but when it comes to just strictly coaching basketball in the traditional sense of that phrase, there was few better, if any better. He's terrific. But, you know, outside of that, yeah, I mean, you know, and I tried to point that out, though I was writing strictly about watching him in that press conference, his final press conference after the Michigan State game. And listen, we were all in touch with each other that night. I had no plans to write. You know, I was watching football games at a friend's house, and I came home and I watched that press conference, and I don't know, it was just like, wow. You know, it was just like, this sort of captures every part of him, the basketball part and the funny part and the sad and lonely part and the tortured part. And then he just looked like, you know, as long as we're being honest, somebody who might be dead in a year. He sounded like somebody who might be dead in a year. But within that column, I did point out, you know, he was not perfect. He had his enemies, and that was true. He was a complicated and complex man. I mean, listen, I don't think we have to even get into the details. We can just talk about a couple of things that everybody knows, which is, you know, he was an old man with no children who lived in a hotel. That's not normal. Like, and though that's a funny, quirky little thing that people have sort of grabbed onto and say, isn't it neat? Rick Majerus, man, he just lived in the Marriott in Salt Lake City, right? You know, that's not neat. That's weird. That's not normal.
Like, that's awesome. I would love to do that.
No, Goodman, no.
Listen, you'd never have to make your bed. You could order room service every night or just go out to dinner every night. I mean, honestly, I could do it for the rest of my life.
No, you couldn't, because we'd roll you in and out of the press room from games, dude. That's not what you need in your life.
There's a workout room in there.
Meanwhile, yeah. Parrish is trying to have like this one of the few rare sincere moments on the podcast. And Goodman's like, I got to tell you, I'd love nothing more than room service for the rest of my
life. All the Marriott points?
I think there's two issues about Majerus that people sort of looked at and thought, man, isn't that cool or isn't that funny? And really looking back on it, it was quite sad. I think living in a hotel with no children is really sad. I think it speaks to something about you and a character flaw or a character something. If you live in a hotel and you die with no child, there's something not, I don't want to say good or bad, I'll just say unusual about that. And incredibly lonely and sad about that. And the other thing, I mean, you know, people would always laugh about Rick Majerus being fat, right? And always laugh about...
And he laughed at himself for it.
Laugh at himself about it. And I can remember being at the Final Four this year and having a conversation, and we were all having drinks and probably heavily intoxicated. But I can just remember one moment having conversations with people who... I don't want to get too specific because I'm not trying to rat anybody out, but let's just say people who had at some point worked with Rick. And they were telling these hilarious stories about his, you know, late night meals and just cramming food into his face. And we were all laughing because on some level that's funny, just like Chris Farley is funny. But it is also, it's what killed him. You know, he's dead today because of the way he lived his life and the way that, you know, all those funny stories about him cramming food into his mouth late at night and not taking care of himself. We all laughed at him at one point or another, but that's why he's dead. And you know, when you consider that, that's why a guy is dead. You know, within months of coaching a basketball game in the NCAA tournament, it seems less funny today than it did, I guess, back in March.
Real quick here, like, you know, 20 seconds or less on each. I'll go to Goodman first. Rick Majerus, his sweater, actually, they're going to put a big version of his famous sweater that he wore at Utah on the rafters. I think that's pretty kick-ass, a lovely tribute. But the AD there and the St. Louis AD within that story are going to push for Majerus to get into the Hall of Fame. So from each of you, Goodman first, do you think Majerus should be in the Hall of Fame? And regardless of your opinion, if it happens, when would you expect that?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I say yes because it's so fresh and he won 500-plus games and got to a national title game appearance at a place like Utah. So that's really, really impressive to me. But I don't know. I mean, listen, there are certainly lesser candidates that are in the Hall of Fame right now. So if we're speaking on that, I just hate – to me – I always think of the Hall of Fame as like the elite of the elite. And all the Hall of Fames now have been a little bit watered down. But, yeah, winning 500 games, going to the national title game with Utah, doing what he did. And again, like Gary said, being kind of the genius that he was considered by his peers, I'd probably put him in.
Honestly, I don't look at the Basketball Hall of Fame enough thoroughly or at all to understand, like, who's in and who's out and where Rick would fall in that line of people. But I know this. He was an important figure in college basketball and a famous
figure. Pitino's not in yet, by the way. Rick Pitino's not in yet.
Well, Rick Pitino's obviously going to be in the Hall of Fame one day, right?
But I'm just saying.
No, I got that. Here's what I'm saying. Like, I don't even know how we look at these things. But I know he was an iconic figure in college basketball. Like, but, you know, a lot of it had to do with his weight. A lot of it had to do with the time that he spent as an analyst on ESPN. I mean, if you start talking about, you know, funny YouTube clips, the "I'm not a big gay guy" is going to be something that comes up pretty quickly. So I think when you combine the character that he was within the sport with the tactician that he was on the court, with the celebrity he was because of his time as a television analyst, if somebody put him in the Hall of Fame, I wouldn't protest it.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I think he will ultimately get in. I would put him in, but Goodman's got a good point. These Hall of Fames have been very watered down, whereas it used to be this, you know, almost mythical-like status with a lot of these people, which we shouldn't in some way do with sports figures as it is, but that's kind of what Hall of Fames were built for. Over the years, it seems we have kind of regressed in sort of what we think is worthy, and that goes across all sports. We're going to wrap this.
Before we wrap this up.
Yeah.
I would just like to tell Gary that you did get cut from your audition for the Blue Man Group tonight.
Okay. So, no.
What happened with you? What happened with you? Somebody was making fun of your outfit. What happened with you?
Well, you know, I can't walk out of the house without Goodman making fun of me, and that's my own damn fault. But, no, I'm just wearing – listen, first of all, I'm wearing my dead grandfather's nice little suede royal blue jacket with – a light peachish, peach-like button-up, and then I've got a different kind of blue sweater over it, you know. And so I just it's kind of stylish.
And what were you gonna wear? What were you gonna wear for pants? But your fiance told you not to wear them.
She didn't tell me not to wear them. I actually caught myself in the mirror. I was like, I can't do that. Actually, I'm wearing gray slacks, but I had on blue jeans. Listeners, I know you're riveted by this, by the way. You're like, for those of you who stuck around to the end of the podcast,
can you do me a favor when you get home tonight? Can you do me a huge favor? Can you put those blue jeans back on?
Not a chance.
And take a picture and tweet it, because honestly, the look, I can't even explain it to Gary. He's got to see.
All right. First of all, Goodman is overplaying this as he usually does. Secondly, I've got to edit and produce and upload this damn podcast. I still got to do the wake up call. I got to drive home. I'm not going to walk in my door, take off one pair of pants, put on another pair of pants, take a picture of myself, put it on Twitter for everyone to see, for you to retweet.
Never get a chance. Please.
Parrish, it was very fun covering a game with you at Madison Square Garden the day after Thanksgiving, by the way. That's what I learned.
We sat there. We communicated. We went out for post-game. Well, I don't think you had a post-game drink, but I had a post-game, like, two bottles of wine, maybe.
your teeth were a little red, yes.
Yeah.
Red wine. Forget about it.
Hey man, I've got the other night when I was talking about this football party, like I've gotten like I can just knock out wine. I stopped drinking beer. Like I mean, I'm not like I'll still drink
so
it.
You're better than you were in New Orleans with wine.
I'm acting better, I think.
The wall doesn't have to hold you up anymore?
You know, when you walk onto the television set the next day and Mateen Cleaves walks up and goes, man, you all right? When Mateen Cleaves is worried about you from the night before, you know that it got out of hand. But, yeah, Norlander watched me drink. I think I might be – I don't know. That might be borderline alcoholism. I don't think it is, but, like, it's now nothing for me to, like, just pour myself a bottle of wine.
We're going to get into that on a future podcast, because after talking about Majerus for about 10 minutes in a very serious tone here, we might have to address your want for wine.
Good for you. I checked it out, Norlander. There's nothing better you can drink for you. I mean, in terms of alcohol, you know, like
nothing better. Orange juice.
This is like the alcoholic's mantra.
Yeah. Hey, I'm being a healthy alcoholic. Would you rather me sit around and drink Guinness all night long?
Knock yourself out literally.
It's a major step for your longevity.
You. I actually was feeling pretty good about things. Like, I've been healthier in my drinking habits. I was feeling pretty good. You guys are ruining it for me.
I don't mean to. It's 1:40 in the morning. We might be the only people left in Madison Square Garden here, so we got to wrap this bad boy up. Goodman wanted to do this like rapid fire. Which teams are legit? Who are the frauds? But we're going to save that for next week, and something to look forward to. Gary, get to bed, please, and we'll talk to you later, okay?
Take care, bud.
All right, we'll be back with the Friday podcast. Haven't locked down a guest yet. Should be a good one. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you then.